Hello and welcome to Nerdy Boys Reviews. We are your hosts. I'm Nerdy Boy Scott.
And I'm Nerdy Boy Christian.
This is your weekly nerd podcast where we give you the latest in nerdy news and discuss the latest hot topics. Explicit content warning. This podcast may not be suitable for all listeners of all ages. Material on this podcast has been deemed to be vulgar, rude, and sometimes even crude. You have been warned. What up, what up, what up, my motherfucking nerdy peeps? How's it going, everybody? Hope everyone has had a wonderful week. Christian, how you doing there, bud?
I'm okay, you know, been better, but I'm good. Yeah, good.
Yay! So, anything new going on in the life of Christian?
Anything new? No real new developments, I would say. Just same basic everything, just, you know. You know, yeah, that's it. Nothing. I'm boring.
Nothing new, he says. Nothing really new. If you guys have listened to some of our previous podcasts, you know that our format has changed. We do two segments a week now on Friday and Sunday, Film Review Friday, and Nerdy News with the Nerdy Boys, I guess you can call it. I don't know. We'll figure out a name sooner or later.
Sensational Sundays. I don't know.
Sensational Sundays. We also have both gotten some tattoos recently. Christian, he got Medusa and Black Bolt, and I kind of got like a Joker Batman theme going on. Both starting up some tattooing.
Yeah.
Debauchery.
Yeah. That's pretty fun. That's pretty fun stuff going on. We just finished watching the Punisher series that was released on Friday, and we watched it yesterday, so Saturday and today. We finished in 2 days, which is probably the fastest we've ever watched a Netflix series, to be honest, just because we're busy individuals most of the time, but we took some lazy days a little bit here, so.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for our discussion on the Punisher, which will be coming up probably next week, maybe the week after. We gotta figure out some, scheduling, in regards to that, but.
Yeah.
We've also been talking about other movies to be reviewing for Film Review Fridays, but we'd still like your input. So if you have some input, some movies you'd want us to discuss, old movies, new movies, in regards to nerd culture mostly. But, you know, we'll take a look at anything. Okay, guys, please reach out to us on our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. Email, who knows, whatever you want, Nerdy Boys Review.
Yeah,
all that stuff.
We also have a sweet website you guys should go check out in free time, www.nerdyboysreviews.com, designed by Christian himself. It's a pretty sweet website.
You can email us through there and find all of our social media links.
Yeah, just an easier way to navigate the Nerdy Boys.
Definitely.
You know, talking about navigating the Nerdy Boys, we've also come out with some, you know, Film Review Friday podcasts in the last several weeks. And, you know, is Rogue One, Justice League, and Thor. So if you guys are interested in listening to that shenanigans, yeah, go ahead and go listen. It's a good time. A good time, guys.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, then they're probably right around this episode, you know, so just scroll a little bit, click on them, listen.
You guys can find us on iTunes, Podbean.com, Google Music Play Store, Libsyn, and Stitcher. So, yeah, make sure you guys go check us out, share with your friends and family, and, yeah, you guys ready to get into the news, yeah?
Yeah, let's jump right into it.
This is the NBR News, live from the NBR in-home studios. Christian, back to you.
All right, first bit of news confirmed, which was previously a rumor, guys, obviously. Amazon is to adapt J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. Amazon has confirmed the rumors that it has acquired the global television rights to The Lord of the Rings based on the celebrated fantasy novels by J.R.R. Tolkien. With a multi-season commitment, the upcoming Amazon Prime original will be produced by Amazon Studios in cooperation with the Tolkien Estate and Trust, HarperCollins, and New Line Cinema, a division of Warner Brothers Entertainment. So this is a quote by Sharon Tal Guada. She said, "The Lord of the Rings is a cultural phenomenon that has captured the imagination of generations of fans through literature and the big screen." she, Sharon, is the head of the scripted series and Amazon Studios. She said, "We are honored to be working with the Tolkien Estate and trust HarperCollins and New Line Cinema on this exciting collaboration for television and are thrilled to be taking the Lord of the Rings fans on a new epic journey in Middle-earth." This guy, Matt Gauzer, a representative for the Tolkien Estate and Trust and HarperCollins, said, "We are delighted that Amazon, with its long-standing commitment to literature, is the home of the first ever multi-season television series for The Lord of the Rings." He added, "Sharon and the team at Amazon Studios have exceptional ideas to bring to the screen previously unexplored stories based on J.R.R. Tolkien's original writings. Set in Middle-earth, the television adaptation will explore new storylines preceding J.R.R. Tolkien's The Fellowship of the Ring. The deal includes a potential additional spin-off series. A world-renowned literary work and winner of the International Fantasy Award and Prometheus Hall of Fame Award, The Lord of the Rings novels was named Amazon Customers' Favorite Book of the Millennium in 1999 and Britain's best-loved novel of all time in BBC's The Big Read in 2003. Its theatrical adaptions from New Line Cinema and director Peter Jackson earned a combined gross of nearly $6 billion with an all-star cast that included Elijah Wood, Viggo Mortensen, Ian McKellen, Liv Tyler, Sean Astin, and Orlando Bloom. The Lord of the Rings trilogy garnered a combined 17 Academy Awards, including the Best Picture Award.
Woot woot!
So yeah, now they're saying The Lord of the Rings and expanding upon that to include other works that are not The Lord of the Rings. But all of that is still pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will have to do with everything that, like, happened in the time gap of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. And then it will probably do, like, some sort of, like, flashback, you know, sequences, like, into, like, the Silmarillion type things, maybe. I'm not too sure.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I mean, I don't know how much they'll touch on some of that stuff. I feel like the Aina Lindale, which is like the first third-ish of the Silmarillion, they could do, but I think the Tolkien Estate will be pretty stingy with like other short story forms with like Beren and Lúthien and stuff that meant a lot to Tolkien. They wouldn't want that adapted poorly, probably. So they'll probably pick and choose what they let them do. Things from the appendixes, Lost Tales, probably parts of the Silmarillion, but it'll be interesting to see exactly what they do and what happens. So
yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. You?
Yeah, definitely excited about that.
Are you more or less excited that Netflix didn't win out the deal? I mean, so it was never really confirmed that Netflix was even in the running, guys. That was just kind of like a rumor. But if they were in the running, would you have rather Netflix handle it, or are you happy that Amazon won the rights over?
I'm fine with Amazon getting it. I mean, Amazon has money and they're going to throw a lot of money at this. It's like one of those things where maybe it could have been different, but could it have been better? You don't really know, you know?
And then how do you feel about, you know, New Line Cinema and them, you know, essentially a subsidiary of Warner Brothers being involved with this, you know, because as we know, Warner Brothers does have a tendency to mess up adaptations.
Yeah, Warner Brothers is dysfunctional, but New Line was a part of the first three films as well, and in the subsequent Hobbit movies. So I mean,
you can go either way on that, then, right? Like, I mean, Lord of the Rings, fantastic movies. The Hobbit series, the first one was good, but the other two were
monstrosities. It was a monstrosity in the way that it was 10 hours of one book. But yeah, what it is to me is that's Peter Jackson, you know, on both of those. Like, I think he let the success of the Lord of the Rings films get away from him and then endeavored to do something different and better, but didn't ultimately, in my opinion.
Right.
But you know, I think New Line is going to be there to just support them probably and probably have some input here and there, but ultimately, hopefully Amazon, their writers, are people that love the books and want to do them justice. And obviously working close with the Tolkien Estate, they're going to have more say hopefully than New Line.
So, I mean, being, you know, the resident, Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, you know, Tolkien works extraordinaire that you are, So, and what characters do you think that could be in this? Because obviously they're not going to recast, you know?
Oh. Well, you don't think they'll recast people?
No, I doubt it. I
think they'll cast an entirely new cast. I don't think they'll take anybody from the movies.
Well, no, I don't think that they'll take anybody from... I just don't think they'll use those characters. Yeah, I don't think they'll recast the characters.
No, no. Absolutely. The characters will be the same. It'll follow the same story.
That'll be dangerous to do.
If you're... I mean, I think what they're going to do is journey deeper into the mythology of Middle-earth and really explain who some of these people are. Maybe who Elrond's dad is, who what happened to his Elrond's wife Elwing, because we hear, you know, certain things about her in the books, never really in the movies, but expand on some of these characters that play certain roles that we don't really get to see much from.
Right.
And if you're looking, you know, into the history of Middle Earth, you're going to look at probably how the world came to be. You get some of the Valar, maybe explain what Gandalf is, you know, wizard is.
Yeah,
is pretty general.
Would be...
what are the Maiar? Because the wizards in this world, the Istari, they're Maiar. They're the same as what Sauron is. They're the same as what the Balrogs are. They're spirits that take forms on Earth. And the reason why they took forms of old men as wizards is because wizards have all this power, but because they're so old, they're limited, you know, like so that none of them ever become too powerful and corrupted like Sauron did ultimately. So it's like if they explain some of that stuff, because that's all like what's really fascinating about the history of Middle Earth and things like that. So hopefully they'll go more into some of that stuff.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. That'd be a story worth watching.
Yeah.
In my opinion. I don't know. I don't know what else we could. We could really...
Yeah, there's not a whole much else to say until more news comes out. If they're doing things preceding the events of the Lord of the Rings, are they going to be things that are leading up to it, that are building up to it, or are they going to be far historical kind of things that might be referred to? Because, I mean, we even get the Song of Beren and Lúthien in the Fellowship of the Rings movie, but, you know, you don't need to know who those people are necessarily, but if you do, it enhances your experience with the film.
Your understanding of the
movie. Yeah, so it's like, it's that kind of stuff that you'd hope that they'd expand on more or show in a flashback or whatever. Explain the rift between elves and dwarves, because we don't really get that explained very much. So those kind of stories that they can bring to light and help.
Well, I mean, we got that in The Hobbit.
We got that they didn't like each other. We didn't really get a good explanation as to why.
Well, I mean, the elves were supposed to come and help them. And they just, like, stood on the mountainside and watched. Remember?
Yeah. There's more to it than that. There's like, a deep-rooted history between
deep-rooted
elves and dwarves and things like that. So.
I feel like I need to read some of this stuff.
Yeah.
These are books you have, right?
I do. I don't have all of Lost Tales, but I'll probably get it.
Yeah. So. We should work on that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So moving on. Danger Girl movie in development from Resident Evil producers. The Hollywood Reporter brings that the 90s comic series Danger Girl will attempting a leap onto the big screen, and Constantine film of the Resident Evil series set to produce. They will develop the film alongside Jerry Bolt Pictures and Adrian Askry's Prime Universe Films, while also eyeing the potential for a TV series as the companion to the feature. Danger Girl, Bolt told the outlet, saying, "Danger Girl is the perfect opportunity to create a team of grounded, relatable, and dangerous young female characters, but with humor and spectacular action." Created by J. Scott Campbell and Andy Hartnell. Danger Girl follows the stories of renowned archaeologist and adventurer Abby Chase as she is recruited by a super secret spy organization along with fellow operatives Sydney Savage and Natalia Castell. Abby receives her first mission to locate a series of mystical relics and keep them out of the hands of the Hammer Syndicate, a huge criminal network bent on world domination. The series, the original series ran for just 7 issues, but Danger Girl has persisted in comics as a various one-shot and mini-series, including bouts with Batman and G.I. Joe. Danger Girl was previously adapted into a video game for the Sony PlayStation and was previously in development as a film with Todd Lincoln set to direct, which, I mean, obviously, if it was in development and never came out, it fell through.
Yeah, yeah. Danger Girl.
Danger, danger.
If you guys know anything about J. Scott Campbell, he's a phenomenal artist, but his female artwork is all very sexualized.
Ooh, big boobies.
Big boobies, nice round peachy bums, things like that.
I like them.
And like he does a phenomenal job, but if you've seen art from Danger Girl, you know it's very sexualized. And I feel like people are going to have a major issue with
saying
this
is
sexist
a shit.
And all that.
I don't give a shit.
No, I don't really either. I don't think the movie, if it happens, necessarily will be. But, you know, we all like to see scantily clad women doing cool action stunts. So.
Absolutely. I mean, it sounds like it could be a pretty good series, if I might say so myself.
See, the funny thing is, I never read Danger Girl, but I had a Danger Girl poster in my bedroom. For a while, when I was a teenager.
That you did, Playboy.
I was just saying, I mean...
A little bit of wacky-wacky.
I never did that to the poster, but I was like, you know, these are very attractive cartoon women.
Boing.
They should be on my wall next to this poster of Kiss on a building in New York. So.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, that was anticlimactic. we were hoping for the build-up, Christian.
That was it. That was the build-up.
Oh man,
it didn't bust.
Yeah, don't say.
EA, which is Electronic Arts, guys. If you didn't know, they're in some deep shit right now.
Yeah, they are.
So they announced that they're turning off in-game purchases for Star Wars Battlefront 2. Why do you say? They're just responding to this whole thing about players complaining about the loot system in Star Wars Battlefront 2. Players can earn advantages in the game or get them quickly by purchasing them. According to a post on the EA website, the game has now disabled in-game purchases. This includes the option to purchase crystals. EA says they'll reinstate the ability to purchase crystals only after we've made changes to the game, or also known as after everyone's purchased it and it's too late, we have your money, bitches. You can check out EA's statement from DICE GM Oscar Gabrielson. You don't have to check it out because I'm going to read it to you right now. So he said, "Thank you, everyone, to everyone in our community for being the passionate fans that you are. Our goal has always been to create the best possible game for all of you, devoted Star Wars fans and game players alike. We've also had an ongoing commitment to constantly listen, tone, and evolve the experience as it grows. You've seen this with both the major adjustments and polish we have made over the past several weeks. But as we approach the worldwide launch, it's clear that many of you feel there are still challenges." Stop laughing. sorry, guys.
"We've heard the concerns about potentially giving players unfair advantages, and we've heard that this is overshadowing an otherwise great game. This was never our intention. Sorry, we didn't get this right. We hear you loud and clear, so we're turning off all in-game purchases. We will now spend more time listening, adjusting, balancing, and tuning. This means that the option to purchase crystals in the game is now offline. And all progression will be earned through gameplay. The ability to purchase crystals in-game will become available at a later date, only after we've made changes to the game. We'll share more details as we work through this. We have created a game that is built on your input, and it will continue to evolve and grow. Star Wars Battlefront 1-1 or 2 is 3 times the size of the previous game, bringing to life a brand new Star Wars era with more free content to come. We want you to enjoy it. So please keep your thoughts coming, and we'll keep you updated on our progress."
That was so impressive. It sounded like Bill and Ted's like Excellent Adventure. Like they grew old and they wanted to make a video game, but for some reason, like I can visualize like this guy speaking like this. I don't know why.
just a so pretentious great. Wanker. That's what
he is. Yeah, I mean, dude, go fuck yourself, homie. All right, so in-game purchases, a.k.a. Microtransactions. What do you guys think? Who gives a shit? You guys are going to fucking give up your money anyways. Yeah, I mean, fucking gonna, dude, let's do the arm thing together.
They did this because they want you to say, oh, my God, this is great. They're taking our input into account, and they're making the game better and more fair for everyone. I'm going to go buy it and have a good job playing Battlefront until 2 months later where they say we've made, quote-unquote, changes to the game, which means all they've done is release in-game purchases because that's a change that they're going to make after they made that change to take them out. They're going to change it and give you in-game purchases so it's unfair and everybody hates themselves for spending $70 on this game.
See, my only problem is, right, is I don't mind microtransactions as long as it doesn't give you an unfair advantage in the game.
Yeah, like the thing is, it's like it's probably just to... Like, if it makes you better and you're being paired up against players that haven't purchased these things and they have no chance of actually doing well because they haven't spent the extra money that you have, that's a little unfair. Right.
And EA is, like, super notorious for just being a money-hungry company that releases these microtransactions in order to actually create an imbalance in the game or create, like, its own, like, marketplace, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, and you see that in the likes of FIFA, like the FIFA franchise, the Madden franchise. They both have Ultimate Team modes where basically you play the game, but you collect cards, and that's how you build your team is the cards are your team, and you could buy packs of cards through microtransactions, and that creates, like, this super, like, marketplace within the game, and it creates this, like, imbalance in the game, too, because, like, often, you know, you get paired, like, with the people that just have these, like, super overpowered teams that you really can't compete with, and yeah. it makes it a lot more difficult to play those sort of games. And if, you know, what everybody's saying about, you know, Star Wars Battlefront 2 or Star Wars Battlefront 1-1, as Christian referred to it as, you know, and a shooter, nonetheless, like that is hard. That's hard to come back from.
Right.
Yeah, like microtransactions are fine if they're for skins and stuff like that, like League of Legends. What's it called?
Hearthstone.
Yeah. Technically, Hearthstone gives like the unfair advantage too, because you can buy packs in that game too. No, I'm thinking of what's that one like fucking? Oh, I always forget the name of it.
World of Warcraft.
No, hold on.
Minecraft. RuneScape.
Oh, God damn you, dude. I'm trying to think. I'm looking on Twitch right now.
CSGO?
Yes, there we go. Boom, CSGO. I mean, no unfair advantage. You could buy things on the game. They have a microtransactions, but they're just like for skins and things like that. There's nothing unfair about it. I'm trying to think of other games, but as long as it doesn't make the game unfair, I'm all for microtransactions. If you guys want to spend your money on that shit, that's up to you. Who cares? Stop complaining. Just play the game, though. I mean, I still play the games that it gives unfair advantages to. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I still play those games. I'm not gonna play this game. It's a wonderful game, but, you know, because of these unfair advantages, why don't you just get better at the game? Stop fucking crying, dude.
Yeah. Work harder.
Work harder. All right. So, Morbius, the living vampire movie in development at studios with the filming of Venom currently underway. Sony Pictures is doubling down on its Spider-Man spinoff universe as The Hollywood Reporter brings word that a Morbius, the living vampire movie is in the works. Burke Sharpless and Matt Saizama from Power Rangers and Dracula Untold and The Last Witch Hunter have already turned in their script. Created in 1971 by writer Roy Thomas and artist Gil Kane in the first issue of Amazing Spider-Man, not written by Stan Lee. Apparently they needed to add that. You know, the Amazing Spider-Man number 101, Dr. Michael Morbius, was a scientist who attempts to cure himself of a rare blood disease that left him with all the traits of a vampire: super strength, bloodlust, fangs, hypnosis, and etc. The character role of the 70s horrors boom and went on to be featured in Marvel's titles such as Vampire Tales, Adventure into Fear, and eventually his own book titled Morbius the Living Vampire in 1992, 1 year after I was born and 1 year before Christian.
Yeah, entered the world.
You know, entered the world. The solo title lasted 32 issues, while a second volume begun in 2013 lasted only 9 issues. Screenwriter David Goyer, oh God, originally intended intended Morbius to be the villain in Blade 2, and deleted the teaser ending on the first Blade movie featured a hooded version of the character. The first of Sony's Spider-Man spinoffs will be currently filming a Venom movie starring Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams, Riz Ahmed, Reed Scott, Jenny Slate, and Scott Hayes.
Yeah, so why? Why do we want a Morbius movie? Want a Morbius movie?
No, not particularly. See,
Morbius
but
as a villain for Blade, good idea. Morbius as a villain for Spider-Man, good idea. Morbius as the main character in a film, bad
without
idea.
Spider-Man, bad idea.
Like, look at what you're doing here. You just said in this article, we have a total of 41 solo issues of Morbius. That means people don't care enough about Morbius to read beyond that. Like, your last series lasted 9 issues because nobody gives a shit about Morbius without other characters around.
So, correct.
Speaking of such things, let's move on to this bit of news. James Franco and Simon Kinberg team up for Multiple Man movie. Deadline reports that 20th Century Fox is developing another new X-Men spinoff movie with James Franco set to star as Jamie Madrox, a.k.a. Multiple Man. Wonder Woman writer Alan Heinberg is attached to pen the script for the film, which has Kinberg currently in post-production on X-Men Dark Phoenix attached to produce. First created by Len Wein, Chris Claremont, and John Buscema, in the pages of Giant Size Fantastic Four number 4, Multiple Man's powers are quite self-explanatory. He's capable of making duplicate copies of himself, which he can reabsorb along with their memories and experiences. Unfortunately, the hero's powers have sometimes backfired and caused the character to lose his mind. The character's duplicates are sometimes capable of running off on their own to not only pursue their own interests, but also to create a life for themselves. Others toe the line of being evil as well. Multiple Man previously appeared in X-Men The Last Stand, which we don't speak of, where he was portrayed by actor Eric Dane. The X-Men film franchise is heating up like never before at the studio, with 2018 making the biggest year yet for the series. The New Mutants will be released by the studio on April 13th. Deadpool 2 will follow on June 1st, and X-Men Dark Phoenix debuting November 2nd.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, so terrible thing, but something that we can salvage from this news article is the X-Men film franchise, right? So I was just thinking, like, as you're kind of reading it, what makes me wonder, right, is, like, does everything tie in together? Is everything, like, cohesive story? Like, such as, like, the, as we know in the MCU, what happens in the movie universe also is, you know, affecting what's happening in the TV universe. They're all one universe, right?
Right.
So is that the same for X-Men? Do we feel like the Gifted is set in the same exact universe as all these other films? Are they smart enough to do that?
You'd hope so. I mean, and then that would include Legion as well. Like, if the rumor, which I don't know if it's a rumor or if it's been factualized yet, that Marvel made a deal with Fox to give them the film studio rights.
Maybe.
Like, if that's true, then they would go hand in hand. You'd have Fox controlling their television and movies, so why would they not put them both together? I don't really know.
Correct.
But
so, all right. Moving on from that awful news article.
Well, to be fair, right, they could make a good movie out of it. It just, to me, wouldn't be a good superhero movie. I don't know if anybody cares enough about Multiple Man. To be fair, James Franco has gained a lot of popularity in the past 5-10 years.
Correct.
So
yeah, that's true.
I think that might create some buzz, but I mean, who really knows? Who really knows? If they write it as,
I mean, that could be a fun movie, though. To be honest, though, yeah, like, actually, kind of thinking about it, watching all these different versions of James Franco.
Yeah.
Like, that could be kind
of
cool.
I don't know if you've watched a lot of Rick and Morty, but it's like the Mr. Meeseeks guy, and they, like, just kept multiplying or whatever.
Right.
That's how, like, I imagine this movie would go, just a bunch of, like, rogue James Francos plotting against James Franco and things like... If they write it as that, as opposed to a superhero movie, then it could be fun, you know?
Right. Yeah, let us know what you guys think about these... Very awkward choices from the movie studios to, you know, create a Spider-Man universe without Spider-Man so far. And, you know, to, you know, bring, you know, multiple man into the fold.
Right.
At X-Men, you know, the X-Men film projects over there.
Yeah.
At Fox. So Wonder Woman 2 release date moved up. Warner Brothers has made a smart decision to vacate its previously held Wonder Woman 2 release date of December 13th, 2019 by moving the sequel up 6 weeks to November 1st, 2019. Why is it smart, you might ask? Because a little movie called Star Wars Episode 9 moved up from its May 2019 release slot to December 2019 when J.J. Abrams took over, which wouldn't give the Wonder Woman follow-up the chance to breathe.
No, it wouldn't, guys.
No, it would not. Yeah, very smart move. No wonders here as to why they did it. No deniability in it either. I mean,
right.
Who in their right mind, what studio in their right mind would have the cojones to go up against fucking Star Wars?
Well, especially DC, who didn't have the cojones to go against Civil War when they moved Batman vs. Superman from the May date to March. So this doesn't surprise me at all. Smart move on your part, Warner Brothers. You're doing something smart for once. So,
you know, for once.
But, you know, we're also probably going to get a Marvel movie around that time. So, who knows what's going to happen. All right. A little bit of TV, DCCW news. Black Lightning premiere date announced. It will take Legends of Tomorrow's time slot. So, the CW has announced that the upcoming superheroes Black Lightning will make its debut on the network Tuesday, January 16th at 9 p.m., following an all-new episode of The Flash. DC's Legends of Tomorrow will have a new date and time when it returns to the network in February. As Black Lightning begins, Jefferson Pierce, played by Cress Williams, is a man wrestling with a secret as the father of two daughters and principal of a charter high school that also serves as a safe haven for young people in a neighborhood overrun by gang violence. He is a hero to his community. 9 years ago, Pierce was a hero of a different sort, gifted with the superhuman power to harness the control and control electricity. He used those powers to keep his hometown street safe as he masked vigilante Black Lightning. However, after too many nights out with his life on the line and seeing the effects of the damage and loss that his alter ego was inflicting on his family, he left his superhero days behind and settled into becoming a principal and a daddy. Choosing to help his city without using his superpowers, he watched his daughters Anissa and Jennifer grow into strong young female women, even though his marriage to their mother, Lynn, suffered. Almost a decade later, Pierce's crime-fighting days are long behind him, or so he thought. with crime and corruption spreading like wildfire and those he cares about in the crosshairs of the menacing local game, the 100, Black Lightning returns to save not only his family, but also the soul of his community. That's about it.
Sweet. Yeah,
when will Legends be on, guys? I don't know. Will it be on a Wednesday? Probably not, because that's when Supernatural and Riverdale air. Will it be on a Thursday? Maybe. Arrow. Eight Arrow's at 8, so this could probably be 9.
Yeah, I mean, is this the end of Legends as we know it?
Does it get put on the dreaded Friday night slot?
The slot of death.
Yes. Well, we'll wait. We'll wait and see.
This is some, you know, off the beaten path news for us. It's not something we normally try to tackle, but something, you know, I thought it could be kind of an interesting talk. But anywho, George Miller suing Warner Brothers over Fury Road money. It looks like a Mad Max Fury Road director is furious at Warner Brothers. A Sydney Morning Herald reports fines series mastermind George Miller suing the studio over an unpaid $7 million bonus owed to his production company, Kennedy Miller Mitchell, which he co-runs with producing partner Doug Mitchell, hence the Mitchell part. The dispute is being litigated in the Supreme Court of New South Wales, where Kennedy Miller Mitchell is based out of, rather than in the U.S., and revolves around whether it was the studio's or Miller's fault for budget overruns. It is unknown if the suit will have an effect on future Mad Max films. Justice David Hammersley,
where is it?
Boom, right there, my friend. That is a crazy name.
Oh, Hammerschlag.
Hammerschlag. I feel like you know that for some reason.
It's German.
Yeah, that's what I thought. He had this to say. He said, on Warner Brothers calculations, Mad Max went over budget. If these calculations are right, Kenny Miller Mitchell does not get a bonus. But the production company claims Warner Brothers made a series of decisions which caused a substantial changes and delays to Mad Max, which leads to additional costs and expenses that the studios wrongly took them into account in an over budget calculation. If those costs are left out of the account, Kenny Miller Mitchell says that Mad Max came in under budget. Miller and Mitchell in a statement said, after all the hard work and success of the film, the studio failed to honor its obligations. Simply put, we are owed substantial earnings for a diligent and painstaking work which spanned over 10 years in development of the script and preparation and 3 years in production of the movies. The hard work resulted in the picture, which found a wide acclaim globally. We would much prefer to be making movies with Warner Brothers than litigating with them, but after trying for over a year, we were unable to reach a satisfactory resolution and have now had to resort to a lawsuit to sort things out. Warner Brothers responded saying, we disagree and will vigorously defend against these claims. Of course they were. They don't want to lose $10 million or $7 million, however much they owe them.
They'll settle.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Yeah. Made for a budget north of $150 million, Mad Max Fury Road began production in 2012, but due to a series of delays and lengthy reshoots, wasn't released until 3 years later in the summer of 2015. It grossed over $378 million worldwide and was a critical darling, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's so high for Rotten Tomatoes because, you know, we deal with reading their reviews all the time, guys. That's fucking high.
Yeah,
it's
good.
And was nominated for 10 Oscars, including Best Picture, receiving 6. There has been talks of at least 2 more films in the Mad Max cycle with stars Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron game to return. And Miller has also been rumored for other directing assignments on Warner Brothers. A lot included Man of Steel 2 and Green Lantern Corps. Ooh, did not know that. See, it does fall into our jurisdiction. he has a long history with the studio dating back to 1981 when they distributed the Road Warriors, a.k.a. Mad Max 2. Other films made for Warner Brothers included Twilight Zone, the movie, Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome, The Witches of Eastwick, and the 2 Happy Feet films last month. That's so weird. Like, everything building up to that would not make you think, like, Happy Feet.
Yeah, you're like, you know, you're reading these things, and it never pops in your mind Elijah Wood voicing a penguin.
Right. Last month, Miller put in historic Art Deco Metro Theater in Sydney, his production headquarters for 3 decades, up for sale after his relocation to Fox Studios Australia. More just news on, you know, history of the movies we don't really want to read
okay,
about.
Okay, guys. Here's the thing, right?
Right. Okay. Let's get into it.
So pretty much what they're saying is, yeah, we were under budget, and then WB stepped in, as they do all the fucking time, made us do things that put us over budget, and now they're saying because we're over budget, they won't pay us the $7 million they agreed to pay us, which I don't know what's in their contracts, but it sounds like a typical thing WB would do. I think they don't want this to go to court. They're going to settle. They're going to pay them what they owe them, or they're going to pay them a percentage of what they owe them because they don't want this to go to court because they'll probably lose, to be honest.
So do you think this is a risky move by this production studio?
If they go to court, it's a risky move because most likely they'll have to pay it. And then because they settle or because it was in court, they're going to have to pay attorney's fees and all these other things, and these attorneys aren't cheap for film studios. Sorry, $10 million is nothing to a company that wasted $300 million as a budget on Justice League. Like, if you have the money, pay the people. Like, why bicker about it? They will settle out of court because they don't want to have to pay thousands and thousands of dollars in attorney fees. Like, it doesn't make any sense for him
it's a never-ending thing, you know, and you don't really want that attributed to your brand, to your logo and everything else when you're trying to build it up so much right now. I think it would be the smart thing for Warner Brothers to do, to settle out of court, pay the people what you owe them, you know? And, I mean, I don't know. It kind of comes down to whether or not this company's lying. If they really are lying, I mean, fuck it. I would fight for it too. I'd fight for the $7 million too. Fuck that. You know, because if you're making false claims, here comes all of a sudden it opens the gate for all these other subsidiary studios to do the same thing to Warner Brothers.
Well, the thing is Warner Brothers' first mistake was to try to fight this in the first place. Because if they don't try to fight this, if they try to work it out, they say they've been trying to work it out for over a year. If they work it out, this never becomes news. It's never a thing. But now it is a thing. Now there's a president.
I mean, no matter what, somebody would find out. Somebody would find out, and they would report on it.
Right, but it wouldn't be as big. And because this is going to blow up, this is going to be a big major thing now. And if they go to court, it's going to be even bigger. And if they lose in court, you're going to have people that say, this exact same thing happened to me. And Warner Brothers is going to have to pay out the ass now because they didn't just fucking pay these people what they owed them.
So you think no matter what, if this subsidiary company did go over budget, you think that they should still pay them out for it?
No, I don't think that, but I'm saying if they had to go over budget because of Warner Brothers should pay them what they owe.
No, I totally agree with that, but what if they're lying? What if they went over budget due to their own miscalculation or a decision that they made or something like that, and Warner Brothers has realized that, and that's why they're willing to take it to court? Do you think, you know, in order to save face and the potential to even lose the case, even if they're not wrong in the situation, because, you know, our justice system is not perfect, as you very well know.
It's not perfect, but with things like this, there's not a lot of gray area sometimes. Like, it's either in their contract or, you know, Warner Brothers can show them evidence of, you know, their income reports or their expense reports or whatever to show that it's their fault they went over budget. And then Warner Brothers will win that case, and they have every right to fight that and not pay that money out. But if they know they're wrong, they should have just paid it out.
Right. I totally agree with that.
Going to court and you know you'll have other people that have potentially been in this situation that'll start coming to it, and it'll eventually become a class action lawsuit if they are guilty, and then they'll end up paying a lot of money out and having bad press as well. Not to say people will go stop watching movies produced by WB, because that to me that won't happen.
No,
people
absolutely
are still gonna
not
go see their movies. It doesn't really matter, but they're setting a precedent if they are guilty that they're gonna have to pay out a lot more money, because I guarantee this is not the first time this has happened. So, but if what the Warner Brothers stands is correct and it's not their fault, if it is genuinely the people making this movie, which I also heard was fantastic, everybody who saw it loved it. So, you know, we might have to check out this Mad Max Fury Road movie.
I actually heard that series is like amazing, actually. Yeah.
But if it is genuinely the people who were working on the movie's fault, they went over budget, they didn't calculate for something, then WB has every right to fight it. I think at this point, because I've already started, it's a matter of pride. I don't think they're going to back out, but you'd hope that they would settle out of court and prevent any wrong or unpleasantness.
Correct. So. Hopefully Warner Brothers does a smart thing that they should do, but, you know, sometimes, you know, these companies are money hungry. They don't want to lose a dime. They don't want to lose a penny if they don't have to.
Yeah, especially now that Justice League isn't performing as well as they'd hoped.
Right.
But guys, go see Justice League. You'll enjoy it. Trust me. And if you want to know our thoughts on it, listen to our Justice League review.
And if you want to know our thoughts on Thor, Ragnarok, listen to our podcast on it.
Yeah. Do those things.
Where can you find our podcast?
You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts, to be honest. I mean, it's right around this one. If you're listening to this one, obviously, you know where to find our podcast, right? But if you're looking for a better platform, maybe podbean.com doesn't work for you and you have an iPhone, download the podcast app. It's on iTunes, guys. If you have an Android and you want to use your Google Music Play Store or whatever, we're on there as well. Or if you have the Stitcher app, or if you have the Podbean app, you can download those things.
Or the Libsyn app.
Or whatever the fuck you want. Where find us. Just find us.
Jesus, so angry. So angry. Yeah. All right, guys. That is all the news that we have for you guys. As always, make sure you guys are following us on all of our social media outlets and things. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat.
Oh, wait.
What do you want? I'm trying to send them a message, Christian.
Finish your
follow
message.
Us.
Finish your message.
And check out our website, www.nerdyvoidsreviews.com. Created by Christian himself. What do you want, Christian?
I didn't see this posted, but I remember I saw the advert for it. This is important. This is important. Did you see this?
No, I didn't see this.
All right, guys.
What, D's Nuts?
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the sequel.
Oh, yeah, I did hear about this.
The heroes, the villains, the magic, in 1 year, return to the Wizarding World with Fantastic Beasts. The Crimes of Grindelwald. This will be coming out next year, November the 16th, I believe. Yes, November the 16th. Yes, so check that out. Also, guys, if you didn't hear, Joss Whedon was totally trolling fans or just genuinely hated Steppenwolf and got a lot of shit for liking tweets about how awful he was.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
That's the only news on that.
Well, no, I mean, other news to divulge in is DC fanboys, you guys are fucking nuts. Because, let's be honest, guys. You know, I won't get too much into it because obviously we have an entire podcast dedicated to what we thought of Justice League, but it was by far not a perfect movie. There was a lot of things wrong with it, guys. And I just feel like, you ever seen like one of those pictures with somebody just, you know, with their head stuck in the sand? Or you ever hear that phrase, you know, get your head out of the sand or whatever? Those need... Man, these DC fanboys need that message in their life. I was just having a conversation with my brother Daniel, right?
Uh-huh.
And this asshat decides that he, you know, he's going to talk to me about Justice League, even though we vigorously disagree on, you know, comic book movies and stuff. And then after everything, I'm trying to debate him, and he's like, "Oh, I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree." After I'm like sitting there pointing out everything wrong with the movie, although I'm sitting there saying, you know, I did like the movie. You know, I just didn't think it was like A or B worthy. And I'm like sitting here like all day reading comments on like various DC, like Justice League posts of, you know, just thousands of DC fans coming out in droves to kind of like boost up their fucking movie and stuff like that, saying this movie was 8 out of 10, this movie was 9 out of 10, this movie was 10 out of 10, this movie was 20 out of 10. I'm like, dude, how can they like possibly say that when it's obviously not true? I can agree like with like a very weak version of like 7, you know what I mean? I'm like, even on the board, I'm like, Christian, you're a little crazy for saying 7. But, you know, that's just my opinion. I just think they don't know how to read into, like, plots. And they don't know how to read into, like, stories and character development. And they just, like, are truly blind to the fact that these movies are not great. Yeah, a movie or a product can be not great and you could still enjoy them. Christian taught me that today.
We talked about this plenty of times, and it's the thing. It's the difference between critical thinking and literary analysis and just going in emotionally. And Scott and I are usually sometimes on different sides of the spectrum when it comes to things like this, because you'll see it. Scott will get really emotional and built up, and that's great. It's great. It's passionate. It's enthusiastic. And me, I'm just trying to be like cold and distant and like an old man who hates the youth. No.
Yeah.
But what it is really is you can go to a movie and love the movie. But guys, I love Star Wars. I love the Star Wars prequel movies. I know they're terrible films, but I love them. I don't care that they're terrible films.
Quite possibly the worst CG I've ever witnessed in movies.
That's okay, you know? But I wouldn't sit there and say these movies are 8 out of 10. I might say my enjoyment level is 8 out of 10, but the movie itself, look, I can't in good conscience give fucking Phantom Menace more than a 4 out of 10. Like, they're not good movies. That's okay.
Right.
I still love the Revenge of the Sith. That's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's not a good movie. It's okay. It's okay to admit that. I don't have to defend those movies. I will not defend those movies to anyone who says these movies are bad. You're right. You are right.
Yeah, and literally, in this Justice League post I was mainly reading today, it was literally over like 3,000 comments of people just saying, "Oh, how great the movie is," and most of the people would never defend what they're saying. What's so great about this movie? Why is this movie so great? Why is it an 8 out of 10? Why is it a 9 out of 10? Why is it a 10 out of 10? Nobody would defend their own point of view, and that's just kind of sad. You know what I mean? Like, people like have opinions, but they have no factual grounds on their opinions. I think it's just quite crazy to me. I'm just like, And then, like, okay. And then I even, like, defended the post. And I'm just like, oh, you know, I gave my opinion on it, you know. And a lot of people were, like, liking it. And then, you know, probably because I didn't give it, like, you know, what everybody else was giving it. But then there was, like, somebody who's like, he put, not applicable. I will never go see this movie. And I, like, commented. I'm like, so why even comment on it? Like, I don't understand that. Obviously, one of the fanatical Marvel fanboys out there. I'm just like, why?
What about the one who said he was graded at zero fuck this movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was a zero fuck this movie. There was one guy, literally, where his opinion didn't line up with his rating. He said 8 out of 10, but then listed all these things that are wrong with it. I'm like, how can you in good conscience say, hey, look at all this shit wrong with it. Here, I'll give it an 8 out of 10.
The thing is, what some people may fail to realize is, yes, there is an opinion on films. The opinion is how you feel about it. The opinion is your enjoyment level. Factually and objectively, like, these are not opinions when you say a movie is not good. That is not necessarily an opinion if you're using evidence, literary techniques, or whatever. There are established forms of critical analysis that tell you this is good or this is bad. You know, and it's how you wield those that comes to your facts. Opinion, yes. This movie is shit. That could be, that sounds like an opinion. But when you bring the evidence to the table, it becomes objectionally a fact.
Right. And here's like one thing that kind of pissed me off, right? So I was talking to my brother, right? And I was like messing and trolling him a little bit, right? And then, you know, I sent him a picture with the guy with his head in the sand. I said, all DC fanboys, when you try to point out anything wrong with Justice League. And he's like, oh, I could say the same thing about you in Marvel movies. And I'm just like, does he, like, not even know that I'm a DC fanboy?
I don't think he knows that you disagree with me on Marvel films, you know?
Like yeah, right. You know, it's like, I heavily say that things are bad in Marvel all the time, but I, you know, can easily say when things are good as well.
Right. You know, I don't know. Like, there is room, like, and that's the great thing about these movies. There's always room for discussion. There's always room for debate. And it can be lively and encouraging and feisty and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, it's like, why are we arguing about something, you know? Like that.
It's so ridiculous. Sorry. I hate that.
Sorry. I was not expressing what I meant there. What I'm trying to say is, like, okay, I don't really know what I'm trying to say, to be honest. But it's not that we shouldn't discuss these things and we shouldn't argue. Like, it's that, like,
you don't like the unproductive debates. You don't like the name calling per se, or you don't like, you know, oh, you're just a Marvel fanboy. You don't like those sort of debates.
I like funny debates where it's like, where you can say, this happened in the movie, you stupid donkey, or something, you know, and I can accept that, like, that you know, because it's not like vicious, you know, it's like just funny,
right?
But like, when it is just, what didn't you like about this movie? Well, I'm not a Marvel fanboy, so of course I like the movie, blah blah, like, you're not answering the question, you know?
And right. It's like,
When all it is you get accused of loving something else because you didn't like this movie or whatever, it's unproductive. But I don't understand the discourse around things. Like, I would argue with someone about BVS, but, you know, like, as long as it's productive, tell me why the movie is good in your opinion, or why you loved it. I can accept those things. I just think that we have to separate our subjective views from our objective views, and once we do that, we can all get along a little better. So, yeah.
Christian is harmony and stuff like that.
Well,
I like to eat it. I thrive in the chaos.
See,
I thrive in the trenches of hell.
We disagree on The Force Awakens, I think, unless you're just trolling me. We disagree on Winter Soldier, unless you're just trolling me. And it's like, we can have discussions. But
I disagree with Death of the Author.
Yeah, I mean, if you can choose what you want to use and not use at times, that's cool. Yeah, we disagree on a lot of things, but it doesn't get like stupid, you know? Like, it's never like oh, I just don't want to talk about this, or like, oh, right. your head's in this, like, you've never told me my head's in the sand, you know? So
I have.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like,
more when it comes to debating things.
I think, like, we both acknowledge, like, that we have biases. Everybody has biases, right?
Of course.
Like I was saying, like, with Star Wars, but also Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man. I enjoy Spider-Man. And, like, from my childhood all the way to now, it's like Spider-Man's been so big. So, you know, if I say I liked Spider-Man more than Thor, you'd still say you're crazy for liking it more, but you can understand why I would. If I say Spider-Man Homecoming is better than Thor, that is objectively false. Like, yeah. there are differences between I like it more and it is better. So,
right. So, I think that's all we got for you guys this week on Nerdy Boys Reviews. News edition.
I hope you enjoyed our lively debate there at the end.
Yeah, our lively little debate-a-rooskies. yeah, if you guys are interested in listening to some of our other podcasts, make sure you guys go check it out. And if you guys do enjoy, you know, leave us a review and share it with your friends and family. Guys, trying to grow our community here at NBR. And we can only do that is if, you know, you guys help us out a little bit.
Definitely.
Make sure you guys follow us on all of our social media. Go check out the website, www.nerdyboysreviews.com. Has links to all of our social media and all that good stuff. Yeah. So, as always, we are your host. I'm Nerdy Boy Scott.
And I'm Nerdy Boy Christian.
Here at NBR, we only leave you with one simple message, and that's
stay nerdy, boys.